You're with SBS Radio.
You're listening to NITV Radio. I'm Bertrand Tungandame. Coming up, a conversation with Jason Wing in the sidelines of the exhibition 8 Days in Kamae, currently showing at the State Library of New South Wales. The exhibition marks the 250th anniversary of Cook and the Endeavour's short stay in Kamae, Botany Bay, and explores what those fateful 8 days looked like. Jason Wing's art is a powerful and apologetic form of truth-telling at a Times protest. In our conversation, Jason Wing tells a side of Cook's encounter with the Gwegal people of Kamae country rarely told in the mainstream narrative. We began the conversation with Jason describing his artwork.
I created a bust of Captain Cook, a physical sculpture, and I photographed the sculpture, turned it into a print, and so the print is hanging on the wall. So it just looks like a bust of Captain Cook, and then there is a sort of museum display light, often used for colonial portraits, paintings, and that light features a UV bulb, a black light bulb. And the black light bulb reveals a kind of secret message of sorts. That's activated by a sensor. So there's a proximity sensor, so you don't have to touch it. You just have to engage with it.
So you walk past and then the proximity sensor activates something. And what does the audience see? That would be scary if something happens as they just walk past if I didn't know what was about to happen.
It's a deliberate action, so the proximity sensor responds to the audience's proximity, and you know it reveals a hidden message. I mean, I might give it away at the end of the show, but you know we want people to go and experience the work, and that hidden layer is often what Aboriginal people think is the truth of this invasion, essentially attempted genocide and invasion. I mean, the work really kind of speaks to a truth. It's an Aboriginal truth, very different from the colonial celebration. We, as Aboriginal people, we cannot celebrate. There's never an appropriate day. This country wasn't discovered. It was invaded. And so I might have to give it away just for all those people in radio land. Yeah. It's hard to talk about it without revealing the trick. So once, you know, the audience is invited to accept the dominant colonial narrative of Cook as this symbolic forefather discoverer of this country. Yeah. So the audience member can observe the artwork in that lens. However, there is an alternative response, an often invisible response, and it's actually invisible on the artwork, but when the black light bulb is activated, it reveals a balaclava on Captain Cook's face. I guess this speaks to the two perspectives, one of attempted genocide and invasion, and international criminal acts such as invasion under breaking Western law, the grey area of terra nullius, and the ongoing perpetuating of oppression to corroborate that Western lie.
It's interesting, you keep saying Cook. What we've been celebrating nationally has been Captain Cook, and you're reluctant to use the term Captain Cook.
Yeah, well, for one, I mean, he wasn't an official captain. Yeah. That was another lie. He didn't circumnavigate Australia. That's another lie. He didn't discover Australia. Another lie.
Yeah.
You know, he was made honorary captain. Look, I've made lots of works about Captain Cook, and a lot of sort of misguided people say to me, you know, what's your problem with Captain Cook?
Yeah.
And I'm like, look, Captain Cook was just doing his job. He was like a parking inspector. He was another foot soldier. He was just taking orders. He was exceptional at what he did. But, you know, why I portray Cook is because he symbolizes colonization.
Yeah.
So I don't have any personal issue with Cook, his achievements, any of that. But I do take issue with how the colony treats Aboriginal people still today.
Yeah, and art is something that is actually very, very powerful to actually perpetuate mythologies and myths. And we've had a lot said about Captain Cook. We have his statues everywhere in main cities, but hardly the other narrative that you're telling.
The colonial dominant narrative is all we hear. Social media bypasses the mainstream media, so we're now starting to mobilise in a collective way. I mean, the mainstream media, they are not interested in anything except for corroborating the colonial lie of invasion. It's been proven time and time again. It's been abused to oppress us. Look at Sunrise, the latest Sunrise protest. It's just, you know, all we hear is the colonial narrative, you know. All we see are colonial monuments of oppressors and, you know, architects of attempted genocide, such as the Governor Macquarie statue. You know, I mean, these colonial monuments are on massacre sites. All of it, all of Sydney CBD, all of our waterways, all of Australia is a massacre site. Yeah. And this colonial oppression is intergenerational psychological warfare. I mean, that's the way we see it. That's the way we feel. Well, so that's the way I feel. And you know what? With these monuments, they're the only solution to colonial monuments and oppressive architecture is a one-to-one ratio.
Yeah.
If it's not a one-to-one ratio, it's not genuine, it's not authentic, it's not dual histories, it's just perpetuating colonial crimes. So the State Library, where the 8 Days in Kamehameha exhibition is, at the front of the State Library, there's a Brum statue of Matthew Flinders, who circumnavigated Australia, and there's a bronze statue of Trim, the cat. Now, we have a bronze statue of a cat next to Flinders, and, you know, there's no acknowledgement of Bungaree, who circumnavigated Australia with Matthew Flinders. You know, Bungaree was, you know, arguably the first Australian who lived dual worlds. He was one of the most significant figures both in colonial and Aboriginal history, and yet, you know, almost erased from history.
Yeah, there's nothing to tell. And that's really poignant that you tell the story of a cat having a statue, and yet this other leader who actually helped, maybe even did more to help the circumnavigation by his own knowledge and maybe his own interceding with other the rightful inhabitants and owners of the country, is not even acknowledged. And that's...
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's very discouraging that our Prime Minister...
Yeah.
States that that the foundation of Australia was not built on slavery of Aboriginal people or others. I mean, if our Prime Minister, this so-called leader,
yeah.
Can say those things and not be accountable, he's setting an example for our nation.
Yeah.
It shows he's belligerent, he's uneducated, uninformed. I mean, he needs to step down. Like, It's embarrassing, and him and his government are saying it's okay to have racist, oppressive policies still.
Yeah.
You know, nothing has changed. If we if we look at the very first encounter of the British colony, so the Endeavour lands, they get in their little dinghy, and before, you know, Captain Cook and his landing party even sets foot on Australia, the welcome to country that Aboriginal people experience was a bullet through the Gweagle Shield. Now, that intention has not changed. It was a forced invasion by lethal force. Now, that has rippled and echoed still today.
Yeah.
And our current Prime Minister supports that.
Yeah.
Our current government has pretty much always supported that.
Yeah.
Facilitated it in all systemic forms, perpetuates it, and no accountability. So, you know, it is always... we've been fighting oppression since 1770,
yeah.
You know. Nothing fundamentally has changed. The colony's agenda has not changed. It's changed names. The work speaks to that, you know, from the very first Welcome to Country, which was a death by bullet. That Gweagle shield, you know, is currently in the British Museum. Members, Gweagle family members, you know, trying to get our artifacts back, which, by the way, that artifact proves that Aboriginal people was a sophisticated civilization, which was the whole premise that, you know, the British could so-called invade if we were uncivilized. Now, if we're so uncivilized, you know, why is that the ultimate trophy that hangs in the museum, you know? If we're so uncivilized, you know, why do you sort of marvel at our ingenuity, you know? Like, we mastered flight, for instance. How's that uncivilized? So, but, you know, it speaks to the repatriation of objects, the symbolism of objects, trophies that the colony does not want to give back, like the Gweagle shield, which was the first conquering symbol, like Pemulwuy's head, countless other objects. You know, whilst we are talking on tangents, it all comes back to the first point of contact.
Very violent and very brutal. And when you talk about objects, one of the aspects in this exhibition is the exchange of presents. What was left by Cook and his party was not even accepted by the Gweagle people. They didn't see it as presents.
No, and that hasn't really changed. I mean, we're just given scraps of irrelevant things when we're the oldest, most sophisticated ongoing culture in the world. Yeah. Like, we don't want your shiny buttons or whatever it was. Like, we want you to leave. We don't want you to punish us for being Aboriginal. Yeah. We don't want you to lie about it. We don't want you to perpetuate it. We don't want you to demonize us for your international crimes. We just want you not to oppress us. We want you to treat us as equals, as humans.
Beings. No, this is a very powerful statement you're making there, because we are now in the middle of a new protest, and I can see your art as a form of protest, a way of expressing these realities that are best actually expressed in the form of media that you use, art.
I mean, art has always been a vehicle for social change. You know, there's graffiti on the pyramids, there's our cave paintings, you know, art is life. As Aboriginal people, we never had a separate word for art. It just was incorporated in everyday life, which is what it should be. It's just not valued by this economic capital system as much as it should be. That's just the way I'm wired. I'm sort of hardwired for visual, distilling complex, you know, social issues into, you know, visually aesthetic pleasing objects in a nutshell. You know, I like making these artworks because, you know, it's uncensored, largely uncensored. I like to archive my artworks in art institutions because, you know, if it's archived in state, you know, approved institutions, then, you know, there's a higher chance that, you know, it might not get deleted as easily from the internet. Yeah. You know, so it's archiving for future generations. So I'm just sort of wired that way. I feel that, you know, reaching people in emotive sense, in a visual and, you know, emotive sense, then I think we've got a better chance of trying to communicate some very complex things to, you know, people who, you know, don't have an understanding of an Aboriginal experience. It's a good medium for me,
it's a good medium, and even for all of us, because now that you express it and explain it, it makes me even want to actually come and experience and see it by myself. And I know this exhibition has been around for several months already online because of COVID. Have you heard about the reactions to your particular part of the exhibition? Because there's a lot of comment going on about this exhibition.
It's a very diverse show. I'm sure there's going to be a whole spectrum of diverse comments as well. I mean, it does cater towards people who celebrate colonial achievements. So there's all of those works in the exhibition. And then there's a sort of an Aboriginal, you know, conversation about those things. Everyone's catered for. So it's just good to go and experience art again. We've been locked up and there's been looking at art online and check the website for details. But, you know, it'd be good to see real art, real people, experience institutions that support the arts, because, you know, the arts in Australia is always the first to be defunded and unsupported. Also, it's good just to get out of our houses at the moment.
If I were in Sydney, I'll definitely be at the State Library and just experience what you just described, because it sounds very powerful. And you said you don't want censorship. How could someone even censor you when you have such a powerful message to put forward, and you're not shy to actually say what you mean and what you want to say through your art?
There's endless ways to be censored, but I do feel blessed and lucky that, you know, art has given me a platform and a voice. I'm just sharing my own individual experience, you know, as a, you know, an Aboriginal Chinese Australian man in this contemporary society. So it's just an alternative view. And if I've encouraged you to want to inquire further, well, great. I've done my job, and so has the State Library. Yeah, we're just hoping that more go along and are curious and want to challenge their own prejudice or support. And I think, it, you know, these things should be discussed. I don't think it's being discussed in an equal representative way. You know, you mentioned there's a lot of movement going on, and the Black Lives Matter campaign, which has highlighted, you know, Aboriginal issues, similar parallel issues. You know, the internet being a tool to mobilise, self-publish, self-narrate, self-archive. It's a very, very exciting time, and there is a really great momentum. And, you know, there's going to be some sticky conversations, but yeah, we've been waiting since 1770. So my work and my life and my cultural responsibilities is a call to action. And so I guess, you know, I hope that my work inspires that too.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.